She brings more trouble on the camp than all the rest together. Ma got herself in hand again. If she comes back, I might hit her. I ain't sure. I won't let her worry my girl no more. Don't worry about it, Mrs. Joad, he said. You won't ever see her again. She works over the newcomers. She won't ever come back. She thinks you're a sinner.
Well, I am, said Ma.
Sure, everybody is, but not the way she means. She isn't well, Mrs. Joad. Ma looked at him gratefully, and she called,
You hear that, Rosa Sharn? She ain't well. She's crazy.
But the girl did not raise her head. Ma said,
I'm warning you, mister. If she comes back, I ain't to be trusted. I'll hit her.
He smiled wryly. I know how you feel, he said. But just try not to. That's all I ask. Just try not to. He walked slowly away toward the tent where Mrs. Sandry had been carried. Ma went into the tent and sat down beside Rose of Sharon.
Look up, she said.
The girl lay still. Ma gently lifted the blanket from her daughter's face.
That woman's kinda crazy, she said. Don't you believe none of them things.
Rose of Sharon whispered in terror.
When she said about burnin', I felt burnin'.
That ain't true, said Ma.
I'm tired out, the girl whispered. I'm tired of things happening. I want to sleep. I want to sleep.
Well, you sleep then. This here's a nice place. You can sleep.
But she might come back.
She won't, said Ma. I'm a-gonna set right outside, and I won't let her come back. Rest up now, 'cause you got to get to work in the nursery pretty soon.
Ma struggled to her feet and went to sit in the entrance to the tent. She sat on a box and put her elbows on her knees and her chin in her cupped hands. She saw the movement in the camp, heard the voices of the children, the hammering of an iron rim, but her eyes were staring ahead of her. Pa, coming back along the road, found her there, and he squatted near her. She looked slowly over at him.
Get work? She asked.
No, he said, ashamed. We looked.
Where's Al and John in the truck?
Al's fixing something, had to borrow some tools. Fella says Al got to fix her there.
Ma said sadly,
This here's a nice place. We could be happy here a while.
If we could get work.
Yep. If you could get work.
He felt her sadness and studied her face.
What you a mopin' about? If it's such a nice place, why have you got to mope?
She gazed at him, and she closed her eyes slowly.
Funny, ain't it? All the time we was a-movin' and shovin', I never thought none. And now these here folks been nice to me, been awful nice. And what's the first thing I do? I go right back over the sad things. That night Grandpa died and we buried him. I was all full up of the road and bumpin' and movin', and it wasn't so bad. But now I come out here and it's worse now. And Grandma? And Noah walkin' away like that. Walkin' away just down the river. Them things was part of all, and now they come a-flockin' back. Grandma a pauper, and buried a pauper. That's sharp now, that's awful sharp. And Noah walking away down the river. He don't know what's there, he just don't know. And we don't know. We ain't never gonna know if he's alive or dead. Never gonna know. And Connie's sneaking away. I didn't give him brain room before, but now they're a-flockin' back, and I ought to be glad 'cause we're in a nice place.
Pa watched her mouth while she talked. Her eyes were closed.
I can remember how them mountains was, sharp as old teeth beside the river where Noah walked. I can remember how the stubble was on the ground where Grandpa lies. I can remember the chopping block back home with a feather caught on it, all crisscross with cuts and black with chicken blood. Pa's voice took on her tone.
I seen the ducks today, he said. Wedging south, high up. Seems like they're awful dinky. And I seen the blackbirds a-settin' on the wires, and the doves was on the fences. Ma opened her eyes and looked at him. He went on, I seen a little whirlwind, like a man a-spinning across the field, and the ducks driving on down, wedging on down to the southward.
Ma smiled. Remember, she said, remember what we'd always say at home. Winters are coming early, we said, when the ducks flew. Always said that, and winter come when it was ready to come. But we always said she's a-coming early. I wonder what we meant.
I seen the blackbirds on the wires, said Pa, settin' so close together, and the doves. Nothing sits so still as a dove, on the fence wires, maybe two, side by side, in this little whirlwind, big as a man and dancing off across the field. Always did like the little fellas, big as a man.
Wished I wouldn't think how it is home, said Ma. It ain't our home no more. Wished I'd forget it. And Noah.
He wasn't ever right. I mean, well, it was my fault.
I told you never say that. Wouldn't have lived at all, maybe.
But I should have knowed more.
Now stop, said Ma. Noah was strange. Maybe he'll have a nice time by the river. Maybe it's better so. We can't do no worryin'. This here is a nice place. And maybe you'll get work right off.
Pa pointed at the sky.
Look, more ducks. Big bunch. And Ma, winter's a-comin' early.
She chuckled.
There's things you do and you don't know why.
Here's John, said Pa. Come on and set, John.
Uncle John joined them. He squatted down in front of Ma.
We didn't get nowheres, he said. Just run around. Say, Al wants to see you. Says he got to get a tire. Only one layer of cloth left, he says.
Pa stood up.
I hope he can get her cheap. We ain't got much left.
Where is Al?
Down there, to the next cross street and turn right. Says gonna blow out and spoil a tube if we don't get a new one.
Pa strolled away, and his eyes followed the giant V of ducks down the sky. Uncle John picked a stone from the ground and dropped it from his palm and picked it up again. He did not look at Ma.
They ain't no work, he said.
You didn't look all over, Ma said.
No, but they's signs out.
Well, Tom must have got work. He ain't been back.
Uncle John suggested,
maybe he went away, like Connie or like Noah.
Ma glanced sharply at him, and then her eyes softened.
They's things you know, she said. They's stuff you're sure of. Tom's got work, and he'll come in this evening. That's true.
She smiled in satisfaction.
Ain't he a fine boy, she said. Ain't he a good boy?
The cars and trucks began to come into the camp, and the men trooped by toward the sanitary unit, and each man carried clean overalls and shirt in his hand. Ma pulled herself together.
John, you go find Pa. Get to the store. I want beans and sugar and a piece of frying meat and carrots and tell Pa to get something nice.
Anything but nice for tonight.
Tonight we'll have something nice.
Chapter 23. The migrant people, scuttling for work, scrabbling to live, looked always for pleasure, dug for pleasure, manufactured pleasure, and they were hungry for amusement. Sometimes amusement lay in speech, and they climbed up their lives with jokes. And it came about in the camps along the roads, on the ditch banks beside the streams, under the sycamores, that the storyteller grew into being, so that the people gathered in the low firelight to hear the gifted ones. And they listened while the tales were told, and their participation made the stories great. I was a recruit against Geronimo. And the people listened, and their quiet eyes reflected the dying fire. Them engines was cute, slick as snakes and quiet when they wanted, could go through dry leaves and make no rustle. Try to do that sometime. And the people listened and remembered the crash of dry leaves under their feet. Come the change of season and the clouds up, wrong time. Ever hear the army doing anything right? Give the army 10 chances and they'll stumble along. Took 3 regiments to kill 100 braves, always. And the people listened, and their faces were quiet with listening. The storytellers, gathering attention into their tales, spoke in great rhythms, spoke in great words because the tales were great, and the listeners became great through them. They was a brave on a ridge against the sun. Nodi stood out, spread his arms and stood, naked as morning and against the sun. Maybe he was crazy, I don't know. Stood there, arms spread out, like a cross he looked. 400 yards. And the men, well, they raised their sights, and they felt the wind with their fingers, and then they just lay there and couldn't shoot. Maybe that engine knowed something, knowed we couldn't shoot, just laid there with the rifles cocked and didn't even put 'em to our shoulders. Looking at him, headband, one feather, could see it, and naked as the sun. Long time we laid there and looked, and he never moved. And then the captain got mad. Shoot, you crazy bastard, shoot, he yells. And we just laid there. I'll give you to a 5 count and then mark you down, the captain says. Well, sir, we put up our rifles slow, and every man hoped somebody'd shoot first. I ain't never been so sad in my life. And I laid my sights on his belly, 'cause you can't stop an engine no other place. And then, well, he just plunked down and rolled. And we went up, and he wasn't big. He looked so grand up there, all tore to pieces and little. Ever see a cock pheasant, stiff and beautiful, ever feather drawed and painted, and even his eyes drawed in pretty? And bang, you pick 'em up, bloody and twisted, and you spoiled something better'n you. And eating 'em don't never make it up to you, 'cause you spoiled something in yourself, and you can't never fix it up. And the people nodded, and perhaps the fire spurted a little light and showed their eyes looking in on themselves. Against the sun, with his arms out, and he looked big as God. And perhaps a man balanced 20 cents between food and pleasure, and he went to a movie in Marysville or Tulare, in Ceres or Mountain View. And he came back to the ditch camp with his memory crowded, and he told how it was. They was this rich fella, and he makes like he's poor, and they's this rich girl, and she pretends like she's poor too, and they meet in a hamburg stand. Why? I don't know why that's how it was. Why'd they pretend like they's poor? Well, they're tired of being rich. Horseshit. You want to hear this or not? Well, go on then. Sure, I want to hear it, but if I was rich, I'd get so many pork chops, I'd cord 'em up around me like wood, and I'd eat my way out. Go on. Well, they each think the other one's poor, and they get arrested,
and they get in jail, and they don't get out because the other one find out the first one is rich. And the jailkeeper, he's mean to them because he thinks they're poor. Ought to see how he looks when he finds out. Just nearly faints, that's all. What they get in jail for? Well, they get caught at some kind of radical meeting, but they ain't radicals. They just happen to be there. And they don't each one want to marry for money, you see. So the sons of bitches start lying to each other right off. Well, in the picture, it was like they was doing good. They're nice to people, you see. I was to a show once that was me and mourn me and my life and mourn my life, so everything was bigger. Well, I get enough sorrow. I like to get away from it. Sure, if you can believe it. So they got married, and then they found out, and all them people that's treated them mean. There was a fella had been uppity, and he nearly fainted when this fella come in with a plug hat on, just nearly fainted. And there was a newsreel with them German soldiers kicking up their feet, funny as hell. And always, if he had a little money, a man could get drunk. The hard edges gone and the warmth. Then there was no loneliness, for a man could people his brain with friends, and he could find his enemies and destroy them. Sitting in a ditch, the earth grew soft under him. Failures dulled, and the future was no threat. And hunger did not skulk about, but the world was soft and easy, and a man could reach the place he started for. The stars came down wonderfully close, and the sky was soft. Death was a friend, and sleep was death's brother. The old times came back, a girl with pretty feet who danced one time at home, a horse, a long time ago, a horse and a saddle, and the leather was carved. When was that? Ought to find a girl to talk to. That's nice. Might lay with her, too. But warm here. And the stars down so close, and sadness and pleasure so close together, really the same thing. Like to stay drunk all the time. Who says it's bad? Who dares to say it's bad? Preachers? But they got their own kind of drunkenness. Thin, barren women, but they're too miserable to know. Reformers? But they don't bite deep enough into living to know. No, the stars are close and dear, and I have joined the brotherhood of the worlds, and everything's holy, everything, even me. A harmonica is easy to carry. Take it out of your hip pocket, knock it against your palm to shake out the dirt and pocket fuzz and bits of tobacco. Now it's ready. You can do anything with a harmonica. Thin, reedy, single tone, or chords, or melody with rhythm chords. You can mold the music with curved hands, making it wail and cry like bagpipes, making it full and round like an organ, making it as sharp and bitter as the reed pipes of the hills. And you can play and put it back in your pocket. It is always with you, always in your pocket. And as you play, you learn new tricks. New ways to mold the tone with your hands, to pinch the tone with your lips, and no one teaches you. You feel around, sometimes alone in the shade at noon, sometimes in the tent door after supper when the women are washing up. Your foot taps gently on the ground. Your eyebrows rise and fall in rhythm. And if you lose it or break it, why, it's no great loss. You can buy another for a quarter. A guitar is more precious. Must learn this thing. Fingers of the left hand must have callous caps. Thumb of the right hand a horn of callous. Stretch the left hand fingers. Stretch them like a spider's legs to get the hard pads on the frets. This was my father's box. Wasn't no bigger than a bug first time he gimme C chord. And when I learned as good as him, he hardly never played no more. Used to sit in the door and listen and tap his foot. I'm trying for a break, and he'd scowl mean till I get her. And then he'd settle back easy, and he'd nod. "Play," he'd say. "Play nice. It's good, Box. See how the head is wore? They's many a million songs wore down that wood and scooped her out. Someday she'll cave in like a egg. But you can't patch her, nor worry her no way, or she'll lose tone. Play her in the evening, and they's a harmonica player in the next tent. Makes it pretty nice together." The fiddle is rare, hard to learn. No frets, no teacher. Just listen to an old man and try to pick it up. Won't tell how to double, says it's a secret. But I watched. Here's how he done it. Shrill as a wind, the fiddle. Quick and nervous and shrill. She ain't much of a fiddle. Give $2 for her. Fella says they's fiddles 400 years old, and they get mellow like whiskey. Says they'll cost $50,000-$60,000. I don't know. Sounds like a lie. Harsh old bastard, ain't she? Wanna dance? I'll rub up the bow with plenty rosin. Man, then she'll squawk. Hear her a mile. These three in the evening, harmonica and fiddle and guitar, playing a reel and tapping out the tune, and the big deep strings of the guitar beating like a heart, and the harmonica's sharp chords and the skirl and squeal of the fiddle. People have to move close, they can't help it. Chicken reel now, and the feet tap, and a young lean buck takes 3 quick steps and his arms hang limp. The square closes up and the dancing starts. Feet on the bare ground, beating dull, strike with your heels. Hands round and swing. Hair falls down and panting breaths. Lean to the side now. Look at that Texas boy. Long legs loose. Taps 4 times for every damn step. Never seen a boy swing around like that. Look at him swing that Cherokee girl. Red in her cheeks and her toe points out. Look at her pant. Look at her heave. Think she's tired? Think she's winded? Well, she ain't. Texas boy got his hair in his eyes, mouth wide open, can't get air. But he pats 4 times for every darn step, and he'll keep a-going with the Cherokee girl. The fiddle squeaks and the guitar bongs. Mouth organ man is red in the face. Texas boy and the Cherokee girl panting like dogs and a-beating the ground. Old folks stand a-patting their hands, smiling a little, tapping their feet. Back home in the schoolhouse it was. The big moon sailed off to the westward. And we walked, him and me, a little ways. Didn't talk 'cause our throats was choked up. Didn't talk none at all. And pretty soon there was a haycock. Went right to it and laid down there. Seeing the Texas boy and that girl a-stepping away into the dark, think nobody seen him go? Oh, God, I wished I was a-going with that Texas boy. Moon'll be up for long. I seen that girl's old man move out to stop him, and then he didn't. He knowed. Might as well stop the fall from coming, and might as well stop the sap from moving in the trees, and the moon'll be up for long. Play more. Play the story songs. As I walk through the streets of Laredo. The fire's gone down. Be ashamed to build her up. Little old moon will be up for long. Beside an irrigation ditch, a preacher labored and the people cried. And the preacher paced like a tiger, whipping the people with his voice, and they groveled and whined on the ground. He calculated them, gauged them, played on them, and when they were all squirming on the ground, he stooped down, and of his great strength he picked each one up in his arms and shouted, "Take 'em, Christ!" and threw each one in the water. And when they were all in, waist-deep in the water, and looking with frightened eyes at the master, he knelt down on the bank and he prayed for them, and he prayed that all men and women might grovel and whine on the ground. Men and women dripping, clothes sticking tight, watched. Then gurgling and sloshing in their shoes, they walked back to the camp, to the tents, and they talked softly in wonder.
"We've been saved," they said. "We're washed white as snow. We won't never sin again." And the children, frightened and wet, whispered together, "We've been saved. We won't sin no more. Wished I knowed what all the sins was so I could do 'em." The migrant people looked humbly for pleasure on the roads. Chapter 24. On Saturday morning, the wash tubs were crowded. The women washed dresses, pink ginghams and flowered cottons, and they hung them in the sun and stretched the cloth to smooth it. When afternoon came, the whole camp quickened and the people grew excited. The children caught the fever and were more noisy than usual. About mid-afternoon, child bathing began, and as each child was caught, subdued, and washed, the noise on the playground gradually subsided. Before five, the children were scrubbed and warned about getting dirty again, and they walked about, stiff in clean clothes, miserable with carefulness. At the big open-air dance platform, a committee was busy. Every bit of electric wire had been requisitioned. The city dump had been visited for wire. Every toolbox had contributed friction tape. And now the patched, spliced wire was strung out to the dance floor with bottlenecks as insulators. This night, the floor would be lighted for the first time. By 6 o'clock, the men were back from work or from looking for work, and a new wave of bathing started. By 7, dinners were over. Men had on their best clothes, freshly washed overalls, clean blue shirts, sometimes the decent blacks. The girls were ready in their print dresses, stretched and clean, their hair braided and ribboned. The worried women watched the families and cleaned up the evening dishes. On the platform, the string band practiced, surrounded by a double wall of children. The people were intent and excited. In the tent of Ezra Houston, chairman, the central committee of five men went into meeting. Houston, a tall, spare man, wind-blackened, with eyes like little blades, spoke to his committee, one man from each sanitary unit.
"It's goddamn lucky we got the word they was gonna try to bust up the dance," he said.
The tubby little representative from Unit 3 spoke up.
"I think we ought to squash the hell out of 'em and show 'em."
"No," said Houston. "That's what they want. No, sir. If they can get a fight going, then they can run in the cops and say we ain't orderly. They tried it before, other places."
He turned to the sad, dark boy from Unit 2. "Got the fellas together to go round the fences and see nobody sneaks in?" The sad boy nodded.
"Yeah, 12. Told 'em not to hit nobody. Just push 'em out again."
Houston said,
"Will you go out and find Willie Eaton? He's chairman of the entertainment, ain't he?"
"Yeah."
"Well, tell him we want to see him."
The boy went out, and he returned in a moment with a stringy Texas man. Willie Eaton had a long, fragile jaw and dust-colored hair. His arms and legs were long and loose, and he had the gray, sunburned eyes of the panhandle. He stood in the tent, grinning, and his hands pivoted restlessly on his wrists. Houston said,
"You heard about tonight?"
Willie grinned.
"Yep."
"Did anything about it?"
"Yep."
"Tell what you done."
Willie Eaton grinned happily.
"Well, sir, ordinary entertainment committee is 5. I got 20 more. All good, strong boys. They're gonna be a-dancin' and a-keepin' their eyes open and their ears open. First sign, any talk or argument, they close in tight. Worked her out pretty nice. Can't even see nothin'. Kinda move out, and the fella will go out with 'em.
Tell 'em they ain't to hurt the fellas."
Willie laughed gleefully.
"I told 'em," he said.
"Well, tell 'em so they know."
"They know. Got 5 men out to the gate looking over the folks that comes in. Try to spot 'em before they get started."
Houston stood up. His steel-colored eyes were stern.
Now you look here, Willie. We don't want them fellas hurt. They's gonna be deputies out by the front gate. If you blood 'em up, why, them deputies'll get you.
Got that there figured out, said Willie.
Take 'em out the back way, into the field. Some of the boys'll see they get on their way.
Well, sounds all right, Houston said worriedly. But don't you let nothing happen, Willie. You're responsible. Don't you hurt them fellas. Don't you use no stick nor no knife or arn or nothing like that.
No, sir, said Willie. We won't mark 'em.
Houston was suspicious.
I wished I knowed I could trust you, Willie. If you got to sock 'em where they won't bleed.
Yes, sir, said Willie.
You sure of the fellas you picked?
Yes, sir.
All right. And if she gets out of hand, I'll be in the right-hand corner, this way on the dance floor.
Willie saluted in mockery and went out. Houston said,
I don't know. I just hope Willie's boys don't kill nobody. What the hell the deputies want to hurt the camp for? Why can't they let us be?
The sad boy from Unit 2 said,
I lived out at Sunland Land and Cattle Company's place. Honest to God, they got a cop for every 10 people. Got one water faucet for about 200 people.
The tubby man said,
Jesus God, Jeremy, you ain't got to tell me I was there. They got a block of shacks, 35 of them in a row and 15 deep, and they got 10 crappers for the whole shebang, and Christ, you could smell them a mile. One of them deputies give me the lowdown. We was sitting around, and he says, them goddamn government camps, he says, give people hot water, and they gonna want hot water. Give 'em flush toilets, and they gonna want 'em. He says, you give them goddamn Okies stuff like that, and they'll want 'em. And he says, they hold red meetings in them government camps, all figuring how to get on relief, he says.
Houston asked,
didn't nobody sock him?
No, they was a little fella, and he says, what you mean, relief?
I mean relief, what us taxpayers puts in and you goddamn Okies takes out. We pay sales tax and gas tax and tobacco tax, this little guy says. And he says, farmers get 4 cents a cotton pound from the government. Ain't that relief? And he says, railroads and shipping companies draws subsidies. Ain't that relief?
They're doing stuff got to be done, this deputy says.
Well, the little guy says, how'd your goddamn crops get picked if it wasn't for us?
The tubby man looked around.
What'd the deputy say? Houston asked.
Well, the deputy got mad, and he says, you goddamn Reds is all the time stirring up trouble, he says. You better come along with me.
So he takes this little guy in, and they give him 60 days in jail for vagrancy.
How'd they do that if he had a job? Asked Timothy Wallace.
The tubby man laughed.
You know better than that, he said. You know a vagrant is anybody a cop don't like. And that's why they hate this here camp. No cops can get in. This here's United States, not California.
Houston sighed.
Wish we could stay here. Gotta be going for long. I like this here. Folks gets along nice and God almighty, why can't they let us do it instead of keeping us miserable and putting us in jail? I swear to God, they gonna push us into fighting if they don't quit a worrying us.
Then he calmed his voice. We just gotta keep peaceful, he reminded himself. The committee got no right to fly off on the handle. The tubby man from Unit 3 said,
anybody that thinks this committee got all cheese and crackers ought to just try her. They was a fight in my unit today, women. Got to calling names and then got to throwing garbage. Ladies' committee couldn't handle it, and they come to me. Want me to bring the fight in this here committee. I told them they got to handle women trouble theirselves. This here committee ain't gonna mess with no garbage fights.
Houston nodded.
You done good, he said.
And now the dusk was falling, and as the darkness deepened, the practicing of the string band seemed to grow louder. The lights flashed on, and two men inspected the patched wire to the dance floor. The children crowded thickly about the musicians. A boy with a guitar sang the down-home blues, chording delicately for himself, and on his second chorus, three harmonicas and a fiddle joined him. From the tents, the people streamed toward the platform, men in their clean blue denim and women in their ginghams. They came near to the platform and then stood quietly waiting, their faces bright and intent under the light. Around the reservation there was a high wire fence, and along the fence, at intervals of 50 feet, the guards sat in the grass and waited. Now the cars of the guests began to arrive, small farmers and their families, migrants from other camps, and as each guest came through the gate, he mentioned the name of the camper who had invited him. The string band took a real tune up and played loudly, for they were not practicing anymore. In front of their tents, the Jesus lovers sat and watched, their faces hard and contemptuous. They did not speak to one another. They watched for sin, and their faces condemned the whole proceeding. At the Jode tent, Ruthie and Winfield had bolted what little dinner they had, and then they started for the platform. Ma called them back, held up their faces with a hand under each chin, and looked into their nostrils, pulled their ears and looked inside, and sent them to the sanitary unit to wash their hands once more. They dodged around the back of the building and bolted for the platform to stand among the children, close packed about the band. Al finished his dinner and spent half an hour shaving with Tom's razor. Al had a tight-fitting wool suit and a striped shirt, and he bathed and washed and combed his straight hair back. And when the washroom was vacant for a moment, he smiled engagingly at himself in the mirror, and he turned and tried to see himself in profile when he smiled. He slipped his purple armbands on and put on his tight coat, and he rubbed up his yellow shoes with a piece of toilet paper. A late bather came in, and Al hurried out and walked recklessly toward the platform, his eye peeled for girls. Near the dance floor, he saw a pretty blonde girl sitting in front of a tent. He sidled near and threw open his coat to show his shirt. "Gonna dance tonight?" he asked. The girl looked away and did not answer. "Can't a fella pass a word with you? How about you and me dancing?" And he said nonchalantly, "I can waltz." The girl raised her eyes shyly, and she said, "That ain't nothing. Anybody can waltz." "Not like me," said Al. The music surged, and he tapped one foot in time. "Come on," he said. A very fat woman poked her head out of the tent and scowled at him. "You get along," she said fiercely. "This here girl's spoke for. She's a-gonna be married, and her man's a-coming for her." Al winked rakishly at the girl, and he tripped on, striking his feet to the music and swaying his shoulders and swinging his arms, and the girl looked after him intently. Pa put down his plate and stood up.
"Come on, John," he said, and he explained to Ma, "We're a-gonna talk to some fellas about getting work."
And Pa and Uncle John walked toward the manager's house. Tom worked a piece of store bread into the stew gravy on his plate and ate the bread. He handed his plate to Ma, and she put it in the bucket of hot water and washed it and handed it to Rose of Sharon to wipe.
"Ain't you going to the dance?" Ma asked.
"Sure," said Tom. "I'm on a committee. We're gonna entertain some fellas."
"Already on a committee," Ma said. "I guess it's 'cause you got work."
Rose of Sharon turned to put the dish away. Tom pointed at her.
"My God, she's a-getting big," he said.
Rose of Sharon blushed and took another dish from Ma.
"Sure she is," Ma said.
"And she's getting prettier," said Tom.
The girl blushed more deeply and hung her head.
"You stop it," she said softly.
"Course she is," said Ma.
"Girl with a baby always gets prettier."
Tom laughed.
"If she keeps a swelling like this, she gonna need a wheelbarrow to carry it."
"Now you stop," Rose of Sharon said,
and she went inside the tent, out of sight. Ma chuckled. You shouldn't ought to worry her.
She likes it, said Tom.
I know she likes it, but it worries her, too. And she's a mournin' for Connie.
Well, she might's well give him up. He's probably studying to be President of the United States by now.
Don't worry her, Ma said. She ain't got no easy row to hoe.
Willie Eaton moved near, and he grinned and said, You Tom Joden?
Yeah.
Well, I'm chairman of the entertainment committee. We're gonna need you. Fella told me about you.
Sure, I'll play with you, said Tom. This here's Ma.
Howdy, said Willie.
Glad to meet you,
Willie said. Gonna put you on the gate to start, and then on the floor. Want you to look over to guys when they come in and try to spot 'em. You'll be with another fella. Then later I want you to dance and watch.
Yeah, I can do that all right, said Tom.
Ma said apprehensively, They ain't no trouble.
No, ma'am, Willie said. They ain't gonna be no trouble.
None at all, said Tom. Well, I'll come along. See you at the dance, Ma.
The two young men walked quickly away toward the main gate. Ma piled the wash dishes on a box. Come on out, she called. And when there was no answer, Rosa Sharn, you come out. The girl stepped from the tent, and she went on with the dish wiping.
Tom was only jollying you.
I know. I didn't mind. Only I hate to have folks look at me.
Ain't no way to help that. Folks gonna look. But it makes folks happy to see a girl in a family way. Makes folks sorta giggly and happy. Ain't you a-goin' to the dance?
I was, but I don't know. I wished Connie was here.
Her voice rose.
Ma, I wished he was here. I can't hardly stand it.
Ma looked closely at her.
I know, she said. But Rosa Sharn, don't shame your folks.
I don't aim to, Ma.
Well, don't you shame us. We got too much on us now, without no shame.
The girl's lip quivered.
I ain't going to the dance. I couldn't. Ma, help me.
She sat down and buried her head in her arms.
Ma wiped her hands on the dish towel, and she squatted down in front of her daughter, and she put her two hands on Rose of Sharon's hair.
You're a good girl, she said. You always was a good girl. I'll take care of you. Don't you fret.
She put an interest in her tone.
Know what you and me's gonna do? We're a-goin' to that dance, and we're a-gonna sit there and watch. If anybody says to come dance, why, I'll say you ain't strong enough, I'll say you're poorly, and you can hear the music and all like that.
Rose of Sharon raised her head.
You won't let me dance.
No, I won't.
And don't let nobody touch me.
No, I won't. The girl sighed. She said desperately,
I don't know what I'm gonna do, Ma. I just don't know. I don't know.
Ma patted her knee. Look, she said.
Look here at me. I'm gonna tell you. In a little while, it ain't gonna be so bad. In a little while, and that's true. Now come on. We'll go get washed up, and we'll put on our nice dress, and we'll set by the dance.
She led Rose of Sharon toward the sanitary unit. Pa and Uncle John squatted with a group of men by the porch of the office.
We nearly got work today, Pa said. We was just a few minutes late. They already got two fellas. And, well, sir, it was a funny thing. There's a straw boss there, and he says, We just got some two-bit men. Of course, we could use 20-cent men. We can use a lot of 20-cent men. You go to your camp and say we'll put a lot of fellows on for 20 cents.
The squatting men move nervously. A broad-shouldered man, his face completely in the shadow of a black hat, spat at his knee with his palm.
"I know it, goddammit," he cried. "And they'll get men. They'll get hungry men. You can't feed your family on 20 cents an hour, but you'll take anything. They got you going and coming. They just auction a job off. Jesus Christ, pretty soon they're going to make us pay to work."
"We would have took her," Pa said. "We ain't had no job. We sure would have took her. But they was them guys in there, and the way they looked, we was scared to take her."
Black Hat said, "Get crazy thinking. I've been working for a fella, and he can't pick his crop. Costs more just to pick her than he can get for, and he don't know what to do."
"Seems to me..."
Pa stopped. The circle was silent for him.
"Well, I just thought, if a fella had an acre, well, my woman, she could raise a little truck and a couple pigs and some chickens, and us men could get out and find work, and then go back. Kids could maybe go to school. Never seen such schools as out here."
"Our kids ain't happy in them schools," Black Hat said.
"Why not? They're pretty nice, them schools."
"Well, a raggedy kid with no shoes, and them other kids with socks on and nice pants, and them a yelling okie. My boy went to school, had a fight every day. Done good, too. Tough little bastard. Every day he got to fight. Come home with his clothes tore and his nose bloody, and his ma'd wail him. Made her stop that. No need everybody beating the hell out of him. Poor little fella. Jesus, he gives some of them kids a going over, though. Them nice pants sons of bitches. I don't know. I don't know."
Pa demanded,
"Well, what the hell am I gonna do? We're out of money. One of my boys got a short job, but that won't feed us. I'm gonna go and take 20 cents. I got to."
Black Hat raised his head, and his bristled chin showed in the light, and his stringy neck where the whiskers lay flat like fur.
"Yeah," he said bitterly, "you'll do that. And I'm a two-bit man. You'll take my job for 20 cents, and then I'll get hungry and I'll take my job back for 15. Yeah, you go right on and do her."
"Well, what the hell can I do?" Pa demanded. "I can't starve so's you can get 2 bits.
Black Hat dipped his head again, and his chin went into the shadow.
"I don't know," he said. "I just dunno. It's bad enough to work 12 hours a day and come out just a little bit hungry, but we gotta figure all the time, too. My kid ain't getting enough to eat. I can't think all the time, goddammit. Drives a man crazy."
The circle of men shifted their feet nervously. Tom stood at the gate and watched the people coming into the dance. A floodlight shone down into their faces. Willie Eaton said,
"Just keep your eyes open. I'm sending Jule Vitello over. He's half Cherokee. Nice fella. Keep your eyes open and see if you can pick out the ones."
"Okay," said Tom.
He watched the farm families come in, the girls with braided hair and the boys polished for the dance. Jule came and stood beside him.
"I'm with you," he said.
Tom looked at the hawk nose and the high brown cheekbones and the slender receding chin.
"They says you're half Injun. You look all Injun to me."
"No," said Jule, "just half. Wished I was full blood. I'd have my land on a reservation. Them full bloods got it pretty nice, some of them."
"Look at them people," Tom said.
The guests were moving in through the gateway, families from the farms, migrants from the ditch camps, children straining to be free and quiet parents holding them back. Jules said,
"These here dances done funny things. Our people got nothing, but just because they can ask their friends to come here to the dance, sets them up and makes them proud. And the folks respects them, kind of these here dances. Fella got a little place where I was a-workin'. He come to a dance here. I asked him myself, and he come. Says we got the only decent dance in the county, where a man can take his girls and his wife. Hey, look."
Three young men were coming through the gate, young working men in jeans. They walked close together. The guard at the gate questioned them, and they answered and passed through.
"Look at 'em careful," Jules said.
He moved to the guard.
"Who asked them three?" he asked.
"Fellow named Jackson, Unit 4."
Jewel came back to Tom.
"I think them's our fellas."
"How you know?"
"I don't know how. Just got a feeling. They're kind of scared. Follow 'em and tell Willie to look 'em over. And tell Willie to check with Jackson, Unit 4. Get him to see if they're all right. I'll stay here."
Tom strolled after the three young men. They moved toward the dance floor and took their positions quietly on the edge of the crowd. Tom saw Willie near the band and signaled him.
"What you want?"
Willie asked.
"Them three. See there?"
"Yeah."
"They say a fella named Jackson, Unit 4, asked him."
Willie craned his neck and saw Houston and called him over.
"Them three fellas," he said, "we better get Jackson, Unit 4, and see if he asked him."
Houston turned on his heel and walked away, and in a few moments he was back with a lean and bony Kansan.
"This here's Jackson," Houston said. "Look, Jackson, see them three young fellas?"
"Yeah."
"Well, did you ask them?"
"No."
"Ever seen them before?" Jackson peered at them.
"Sure. Worked at Gregorio's with them."
"So they knowed your name?"
"Sure. I worked right beside him."
"All right," Houston said. "Don't you go near him. We ain't gonna throw him out if they're nice. Thanks, Mr. Jackson."
"Good work," he said to Tom.
"I guess them's the fellas."
"Jewel picked him out," said Tom.
"Hell, no wonder," said Willie. "His engine blood smelled him. Well, I'll point him out to the boys."
A 16-year-old boy came running through the crowd. He stopped, panting, in front of Houston.
"Mr. Houston," he said, "I've been like you said. They's a car with six men parked down by the eucalyptus tree, and they's one with four men up that north side road. I asked 'em for a match. They got guns. I seen 'em."
Houston's eyes grew hard and cruel.
"Willie," he said, "you sure you got everything ready?"
Willie grinned happily.
"Sure have, Mr. Houston. Ain't gonna be no trouble."
"Well, don't hurt 'em. 'Member now, if you can, quiet and nice, I kind of like to see him. Be in my tent."
"I'll see what we can do," said Willie.
Dancing had not formally started, but now Willie climbed onto the platform.
"Choose up your squares," he called.
The music stopped. Boys and girls, young men and women, ran about until eight squares were ready on the big floor, ready and waiting. The girls held their hands in front of them and squirmed their fingers. The boys tapped their feet restlessly. Around the floor the old folks sat, smiling slightly, holding the children back from the floor. And in the distance the Jesus lovers sat with hard, condemning faces and watched the sin. Ma and Rose of Sharon sat on a bench and watched, and as each boy asked Rose of Sharon as partner, Ma said, "No, she ain't well," and Rose of Sharon blushed and her eyes were bright. The caller stepped to the middle of the floor and held up his hands.
"All ready? Then let her go."
The music snarled out chicken reel, shrill and clear, fiddles skirling, harmonicas nasal and sharp, and the guitars booming on the bass strings. The caller named the turns, the squares moved, and they danced forward and back, hands round, swing your lady. The caller in a frenzy tapped his feet, strutted back and forth, went through the figures as he called them.
"Swing your ladies and do-si-do, join hands round and away we go."
The music rose and fell, and the moving shoes beating in time on the platform sounded like drums.
"Swing to the right and swing to the left. Break, now break, back to back."
The caller sang the high, vibrant monotone. Now the girl's hair lost the careful combing. Now perspiration stood out on the foreheads of the boys. Now the experts showed the tricky intersteps, and the old people on the edge of the floor took up the rhythm, patted their hands softly and tapped their feet, and they smiled gently and then caught one another's eyes and nodded. Ma leaned her head close to Rose of Sharon's ear. Maybe you wouldn't think it, but your pa was as nice a dancer as I ever seen when he was young. And Ma smiled. Makes me think of old times, she said. And on the faces of the watchers, the smiles were of old times. Up near Muskogee, 20 years ago, there was a blind man with a fiddle. I seen a fella once could slap his heels 4 times in one jump. Swedes up in Dakota, know what they do sometimes? Put pepper on the floor, gets up the ladies' skirts and makes them pretty lively. Lively as a filly in season. Swedes do that sometimes. In the distance, the Jesus lovers watched their restive children. Look on sin, they said. Them folks is riding to hell on a poker. It's a shame the godly got to see it. And their children were silent and nervous. One more round and then a little rest, the caller chanted. Hit her hard, 'cause we're gonna stop soon. And the girls were damp and flushed, and they danced with open mouths and serious, reverent faces, and the boys flung back their long hair and pranced, pointed their toes and clicked their heels. In and out the squares moved, crossing, backing, whirling, and the music shrilled. Then suddenly it stopped. The dancers stood still, panting with fatigue, and the children broke from restraint, dashed on the floor, chased one another madly, ran, slid, stole caps and pulled hair. The dancers sat down, fanning themselves with their hands. The members of the band got up and stretched themselves and sat down again, and the guitar players worked softly over their strings. Now Willie called, "Choose again for another square, if you can." The dancers scrambled to their feet, and new dancers plunged forward for partners. Tom stood near the 3 young men. He saw them force their way through, out on the floor, toward one of the forming squares. He waved his hand at Willie, and Willie spoke to the fiddler. The fiddler squawked his bow across the strings. 20 young men lounged slowly across the floor. The 3 reached the square, and one of them said, "I'll dance with this here." A blonde boy looked up in astonishment. "She's my partner." "Listen, you little son of a bitch." Off in the darkness, a shrill whistle sounded. The 3 were walled in now, and each one felt the grip of hands. And then the wall of men moved slowly off the platform. Willie yelped, "Let's go." The music shrilled out, the caller intoned the figures, the feet thudded on the platform. A touring car drove to the entrance. The driver called, "Open up, we hear you got a riot." The guard kept his position. "We got no riot. Listen to that music." "Who are you?"
"Deputy sheriffs."
"Got a warrant?"
"We don't need a warrant if there's a riot."
"Well, we got no riots here," said the gate guard. The men in the car listened to the music and the sound of the caller, and then the car pulled slowly away and parked in a crossroad and waited. In the moving squad, each of the 3 young men was pinioned, and a hand was over each mouth. When they reached the darkness, the group opened up. Tom said, "That sure was did nice." He held both arms of his victim from behind. Willie ran over to them from the dance floor.
"Nice work," he said. "Only need 6 now. Houston wants to see these here fellers."
Houston himself emerged from the darkness.
"These the ones?"
"Sure," said Jewel. "Went right up and started it. But they didn't even swing once."
"Let's look at them."
The prisoners were swung around to face him. Their heads were down. Houston put a flashlight beam in each sullen face.
"What did you want to do it for?"